You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning, Tri-State. This is Lisa Seif at Radio Rehab. Glad to be back talking to you again this Saturday morning. We have an incredibly insightful, energetic woman to talk to you today about her addiction and recovery. We've been visiting for a while, and she's got an incredible story of experience, strength, and hope in recovery from her addiction. Here's a woman that had some time in life of being successful and then got into an addiction later, but has been in recovery and really a contribution to the community. Hi, Etta. Glad you're here.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there. It's a good day.
Yes,
good day.
It really is. Every day is a good day.
Yes.
Especially being clean and sober.
Absolutely. You know, this show's just a way to share with people that addiction is alive and it's a monster, and a lot of us have suffered or know somebody that suffered from an addiction. But more than anything, how, if you have a substance abuse problem or addiction, you can get help and get into recovery. People need to see and know about that too.
Exactly, yes.
So tell us a little about you and your story and share with us about you.
Okay, sure. I was born here in Evansville. I was born and raised. I went to school here in Evansville. My first exposure to alcohol was when probably I was about 16 years old. I did it with my friends. When I was in high school, we wanted to have fun and that kind of thing. We thought it was fun to be able to get us a couple of drinks and act funny and mm-hmm. have a lot of fun and everything.
Kind of not thinking about consequences at 16, huh?
Exactly. Oh, no. We didn't know what consequences were at that point. However, as Lisa was saying, my addiction didn't kick in until I was older in age. I had started to have a family and everything at an early age at 20, and just basically went to work and took care of my children. And then the worst happened. Everything started spiraling downhill, and I happened to went through a divorce, and that's when my addiction came into play.
After the divorce?
After I went through a divorce, yes. And it wasn't, when I first started, I thought it was something that I could use to cover up my, mm-hmm. my pain and my terrible feelings that I had. You know, I didn't want to feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I
numb out.
I tried to numb everything out. I just didn't want to go through the terrible emotional feeling of going through a divorce, because, you know, that can be very, very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically how my addiction started.
So as a girl in high school, did you have aspirations, dreams? Was your family life supportive? What was it like for you younger?
Okay. Yeah, well, I did come from a really, really great background. I had both of my parents there. They were hardworking people, and they made sure that our needs were met. And I had some really good friends when I was young. And basically, I just kind of felt like that I was less than. I don't understand why, but I never thought that I would fit. I always tried to fit in with my friends and people around me, and I never felt like that I was good enough or that I was capable of being what everybody else was.
So were you comparing yourself to other women, or was this just something you had inside of you, just that alone or I'm not good enough feeling?
Yes, it was that I just wasn't good enough feeling, and I guess I let what people would say to me affect me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that was the kind of beginning of it, that I always
sensitive.
I was very sensitive. I was a very sensitive person, and I was very just was afraid of how people would judge me and how people would look at me. That meant a lot to me, you know.
Image.
My image.
Yeah.
That was the correct word to use there, Lisa. Thank you. My image. It was something that was, I guess it was pride too, and my ego and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just
measuring up.
It wasn't measuring up to where I thought it should be, yes.
So you graduated high school, though, and then did you have goals?
Yes, I did. I went to high school here in Evansville. I went to Wright's and...
West Sider.
Yes, I'm a West Sider.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Is it true what they say? Beer isn't even considered alcohol on the West Side.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. But went to Wright's, and it was back in the 70s, and it was pretty tough back then.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went to school, and, you know, doing my first, that should have told me something then. When I first started going to high school, like in my freshman and sophomore year, I could care less about school. I went to school to have fun, and I went to school to party.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I went to school for. I didn't care anything about my grades or anything. But then something, at the end of my sophomore year, going into my junior year, something, reality kind of snapped with me, even back at a young age.
Something clicked in?
Something clicked in and says, hey, you need to get more involved in your studies. Mm-hmm. You need to... You know, because you're going to graduate. That was my thing. That was my goal at that point. I have to graduate. So I kind of got myself together and started doing what was required of me for making my grades and that kind of thing. And I did very well in my
growth spurt there.
Yes.
Grew up a little. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I started thinking about what I was going to do when I got out of high school. And that was kind of this another place where fear started kicking in with me too. I was afraid of losing. I was afraid of failure. And I didn't want to be a failure.
Mm.
Yeah, I didn't want to be a failure. So after high school, I went to USI for like a year, and I was always admired business people. It was just something about business people I admired a lot. And I always wanted to be successful and be a successful business person or businesswoman, whatever, you know, however you want to say
sure.
that. But I did go to USI. I did take some business courses. And then I met my ex-husband. I met him, my first husband, at the University of Evansville. And we decided we wanted to get married. So there went my college career.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, my
shifted
life.
Shifted all your energy to the marriage.
I shifted all my energy to the marriage. And then I started, you know, having children and everything and raising a family. And that became my goal. I mean, that became my priority.
That's what you got up to do every day. Be a wife, be a mom.
Exactly.
Typical American woman.
Yep, absolutely. And we went, the marriage went, you know, pretty good in the beginning. And I just think it was a lot of immaturity on my part. I can't really speak for him,
sure.
But I can speak for myself that I was very immature at that age. I didn't know a whole lot. I didn't know anything about life at the age of 20.
No.
You know, starting a family and everything. But, you know, it extended back. From, I think it's just that fear of being alone. I think that's what it was, too.
That you think that women have that, we're just oriented toward thinking we have to be in a marriage or a relationship to be whole?
Exactly. And see, I've looked on the outside. We talk about that. My husband and I talk about this today, that, you know, we as, especially being in addiction, not only just women, but all people that are have a problem with addiction, that we look on the outside to find something that we should already have on the inside. We look on the outside for love, and see, love starts within. You have to learn how to love yourself
sure.
before you can even give out love, or you can even love someone else. So, you know, that's a real important point, Lisa. But that was one
that
of my issues.
Dependency on other people to make us feel that, like their approval. We got to have the outsides telling us we're okay.
Exactly. Instead of letting us know, instead of us knowing to say that we're okay with ourselves, we have to have someone else's approval
yeah.
and saying that this is okay. Are you okay?
Do you think that's more prevalent in women?
Yes, I do.
That need for approval and security and
yes.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yes, it is. I see that all the time in women. And, you know,
but you were living out the American dream, going on into a business, possible career. You were a mom, a wife. So what happened after that?
I tried to do it all, Lisa. And I believe it got overwhelming for me. And I was afraid of, even though I wanted success in my life, I was afraid of failure.
Sure.
And I think that being afraid of failure so far, mm-hmm. I ended up failing. But, you know, you don't have to stay there. You don't have to stay there. You can always start
a new day.
You can always start a new day and start all over again, you know. And I guess
when you're in an addiction, though, did you start then drinking and drugging heavily after the divorce, or did the divorce, was that part of the addiction?
Yes, there was actually, I went through a divorce because things wasn't going right. They were going all sour in my marriage and everything. And I turned to alcohol and drugs because I didn't want to feel anything. I wanted to cover up, and I didn't, you know, that hurt and pain mm-hmm. that I felt and the pain that I saw my children going through and everything, and by us splitting up and all, you know, it was overwhelming for me. So
yeah.
I wanted to numb myself out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So did you realize you were going off into a bad...
At the time, you know, I didn't, because I was functioning.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to function with alcohol and drugs
yeah.
in the beginning.
Yeah.
And as the disease progressed on, it started getting worse and worse. And it turned out at the end, close to the end of my addiction, that I was a person that didn't function.
Mm-hmm.
When I had alcohol and drugs, I was not functional at all.
Did you see it in yourself?
No, I didn't. No. In the beginning, I didn't see it in myself. But
did anybody see it in you? Or
well, I started being less responsible. I started being less
proud of yourself.
Proud of myself and just letting my self-esteem go mm-hmm. and all of those sort of things. So that should have been a trigger. That should have been a signal for me to know that something was really going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I
you
tried.
You were probably in the addiction so already. That you couldn't see the truth from the false.
No, I couldn't. I couldn't determine the truth from the
yeah.
false. I thought it was okay. It's okay for me to do this.
Everyone else does it.
Yeah, exactly. It's okay mm-hmm. for me to do this. You know, I'm grown.
Right.
I'm taking care of myself. Nobody's
right.
paying my bills. I can drink and have a little. You know, get high when I want to or whatever. I'm paying for it. Nobody's paying for it for me. But like I said, it turned out to be a really really bad situation mm. for me. It took my life for a downfall is basically what happened. And
what finally got you to turn around?
Well, actually, I was around some people that I saw that were suffering so bad. I saw a person actually die in addiction,
mm-hmm.
and that just kind of woke me up. And also, I just saw some of the physical things that were happening, and mental, and as well as spiritually, some of the things that people were doing. And addiction is a very, very terrible thing.
It's ugly.
It's a very ugly thing.
So you started to see it in yourself.
I started.
Through others, seeing they were there, so I must be right there with
exactly.
them.
Exactly. But I didn't want to admit the fact that I was, and you know, being in addiction, you know, we always look at another person and says, oh, well, I'm not as bad as this person,
right.
you know. But it's all bad.
Yeah.
It's all bad. It's a bad, it's
it
not
is.
Good.
So who outside of yourself, or did anybody finally come to you and say, the show's up, time to get help?
Well, I tell you what happened. This happened to me, and I was over to a place where I was staying at. Because when you're in addiction, you're not stable at all.
Mm-mm.
You know, you go, you
can
run.
Be homeless with a home.
You, that's exactly right. Whoever mm-hmm. has the drugs and alcohol, that was your home.
Yeah.
And both of my brothers and my mother had came out looking for me because I hadn't been in contact with them for quite some time, and they just mm-hmm. wanted to know, you know, what I was doing. Was I okay? Was I eating? And you know, that's really a sad thing. But
they're the ones that found you.
They were the ones that found me. But at that moment when they did see me, I was so messed up, so mentally, and I was so drugged up and so, you know, full of alcohol that I couldn't even talk. I couldn't even look at him in the face. But I started thinking about it after that and looking at the people that were around me, how they were suffering. And I just got tired of living that way. And I wanted some help. I just really wanted some help. I didn't want to live that way anymore.
So for people listening to Radio Rehab, you think it's important families, friends know they can show up and help?
Definitely. And the best
even
thing,
if you don't want to see them,
came to you. I ran so many times that I would see my brother's car. I'll never forget. I would see my brother's car, mm-hmm. and I would take off and run and hide, mm-hmm. and all of that stuff because I wasn't ready to face it. I was still in denial. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready. And so you have to have that willingness. You have to want it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to want help.
You think you do have to want help?
You have to want it to get it.
Or at least not want what you have anymore.
Exactly. Whew. Want to get rid of that addiction,
yeah.
That's for sure. Or to help that addiction.
So but, you think most women do know, Etta? Most people in their deepest self know something's wrong?
Yes. And that's what happened with me all along. I knew that I had a problem, but I just ignored it and denied it, mm-hmm. to the bitter end until I hit a rock bottom.
So then your family was there, and
yes.
Where did you go from there then? Treatment or?
Yes, what I did was they said, leave her alone, let her make up her own mind. And finally, they did the right thing. When you just let a person make up their own mind and decide that they want to help themselves, then that's when, you mm-hmm. know, the family members come in and everything and guide them to the right places. And like I said, treatment is a great start.
So you started with treatment?
I went into treatment, yes, out at the Stepping Stone, and I learned
great
a lot.
Great place.
Great place. And great I've learned place. A lot. I learned yeah. a lot about this disease of addiction. And
so were you inpatient?
Yes, I went through detox and I went through residential and completed that. And I knew that once I was completed with that, that I wasn't sure. I needed more treatment. I needed long term.
Wow, so there you knew was, that on
yes,
your own?
Yes, I knew that on my own. And,
so you were really committed.
I was very, very committed to getting my life back together. And I heard about the YWCA and the recovery program.
Another great program.
That is a wonderful program. Any woman that wants to really turn their lives around, mm-hmm. and really get into a very, very structured and disciplined program, you know, I would highly suggest that the YWCA program, because that program really changed my life.
Gives you some time to settle into this recovery thing.
Yes, it does. It gives you time to think and it gives you time to replace that discipline, mm-hmm. and that structure back in your life that you just lose when you're out there in that addiction.
Do you think women need that a little bit more, that extra time?
Yes, women, I would say, I can speak for myself, that I know that I needed time. It does take a lot of time. You don't need a lot of interference from family members. You don't need
right.
interference from a partner, mm-hmm. or a relationship.
All those distractors.
Right, exactly. And I was just determined that I wasn't going to let anything and anybody distract me from what I was focused on doing, and that was to stay clean and sober one day at a time.
So you say that word focus. That was a key ingredient for you, wasn't it? To just
yes.
stay focused.
Yes. I was very, very focused in my early recovery. And I'm still focused today. But, I mean, I really had to just block everything around me out and just focused on what I was taught in early recovery. I wanted to build a foundation. I went to the 12-step meetings,
mm-hmm.
the NA meetings and the AA meetings. And I sat there and I listened to those people that had a lot of sobriety and listened to them share their experience, strength, and hope. And I says, well, you know, maybe this will work for me, you know. And I said, I can at least try.
So you were open-minded from
the start. I was very, very open-minded from the start, and that's what it takes.
That's key, isn't it? For
yes. Oh, yeah, it is. And I just listened. I sat there and listened, and I took the suggestions of the 12-step program. It says to get a sponsor. Mm-hmm. It says to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and that's exactly what I done.
So you didn't balk at any of it. I did it.
I did it. I did. And I was so desperate.
Tough about your recovery.
Yes, I was very tough about it.
Yeah.
I was very desperate, and to get my life back to a somewhat normal state of mind, a normal state, that I was willing to go to, as the big book says, I was willing to go to any length to get it, and I did do that. And,
Etta, what do you think? Maybe what you said, that focus, and as we talked earlier, you just have to be tough about your recovery. I know you've worked with other women, and a lot of women look to you and ask you to help them now, which is a wonderful gift that sobriety affords us, that opportunity to help others. What do you think it is that we need to do with the women in that come in for help? They just don't, a lot of them don't seem to want to do the deal. I don't know. Women just seem to fly off like they just disappear.
Yes. And I tell you what, Lisa, what it is that women, we're emotional creatures anyway. We just automatically
feel
emotional.
Yeah.
And we feel everything. And we wear our emotions on our shoulders, you know. And I think that's what happens to some of the women. They get to those peaks and times in their early sobriety where they just can't handle the feelings. And you know, we talk about that pink cloud that we're on. We're getting to recovery, and we have 2 or 3 months clean and sober. And then, you know, that
I'm cured.
Yes. I'm everything's okay. I'm doing just wonderful. Everything's life is just great. And then all of a sudden, here this roller coaster, here that it comes, and you start tumbling down all the way down to the ground.
Yeah.
And see, you have to be able to withstand that. And that's part of it.
You got to have a toughness about you.
You have to be rough and tough
about
when it
that
comes
sobriety.
To
sobriety. Yeah.
Yes, you do.
Ooh, and focused, like you said.
Yes. That's the main thing. The main thing in recovery is you have to be focused. And that means you can't recover for your children. You can't recover for your mother. You can't recover for your employer. Mm-hmm. You have to do it for yourself. You
Did
know?
You know that from the start?
Yes, I knew that from the start. I knew that I had to do this for me.
Deal.
I had to be 100% me. I couldn't do it for my children.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it for my family members. I couldn't do it for anybody but me. Absolutely, positively me. And when I felt that way, and when I thought about it that way, everything worked out for me. When I didn't want to do it for mother, because mother says, well, this is the wrong thing to do, and I didn't raise you that way.
Right.
Well, that didn't matter. Nothing mattered to me. What mattered to me was that I wanted this myself.
Yeah.
It has to come from within.
Yeah, it really does. Was it that way for you at first, or did the treatment, the 12-step meetings, the why, did that all just help cement that for you?
Basically helped me to build a foundation, and it helped instill what I already knew what I had to do in order to achieve sobriety.
Etta, are you pretty open about being an alcoholic to people, your job, your family, your friends?
Yes.
You are.
They
open
all
about
know. Yes, they all know. And it's nothing that I have to hide. I don't feel ashamed to let people know, share my experience, strength, and hope, because that gives me even more hope.
Yeah.
That I know that I can deal, face anything in life, that I don't have to cope and use alcohol and drugs to deal with my issues in life, because we all have issues.
Absolutely.
And that's just not the way to go.
Yeah, some of us just can't afford the luxury of a drink when we've had a bad day.
Exactly. And that's one thing that I did learn from this program. I know that I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and that is not an option. That
do you put it on job applications? Well, you don't have criminal charges, do you? You
didn't. Unfortunately, I did get a misdemeanor.
I mean, do you let your employer? Do you tell people right off the bat that you're in recovery?
Oh yes, I did.
Really?
I did.
Good.
I was very, very afraid to at first, but you know, the program says to be open and honest. This is an honest program. So, you know, I figured if I was honest and started out right, that everything was going to end up right. And that's exactly what happened to me.
So that's great that you're open and honest about it with people.
Yes. Anybody that asks me any questions about recovery or, you know, my experience, Strength and Hope, I'm more than happy to share it with them because, like I said, there is a way out.
Mm-hmm. And people can see you and find Etta at 12-step meetings all over Evansville. There's 100 of them now a week, isn't there, in Evansville, AA meetings?
Yes, there's it's over 100.
Yeah.
It's over 100 AA meetings. And then
And you have a home group, a sponsor.
Yes, I do have a sponsor. I do have a home group.
Yeah.
And I do sponsor, I do have two sponsees. I do sponsor other women.
Isn't that fun?
Yes.
That's the challenge, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But I enjoy what I do because it gives me a sense of self-worth. I know that I'm doing something to help someone else along the way. And that's what recovery is all about, is passing it along and helping
others. And yes. You do.
Yes.
And Etta is also married to another recovering alcoholic, and they are going to come on and share their experience, Strength and Hope, with us next month also. So that'll be cool, hearing how couples can make it in recovery. There's another challenge.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, it is. It can be a challenge sometimes,
yeah.
But we do respect each other. I know that because my husband has a lot more sobriety and been
time
in the program.
Yeah,
he has a lot more time than I have. But, you know, I see him because some of my growing in this program, that was something that the issues that he had to deal with when I got into recovery,
mm-hmm.
by him knowing how to deal with these issues and things.
Yeah.
You know, and he's given me time to be able to grow and he is so patient with me, you know,
Aww.
And I'm really grateful for that today.
You guys are lucky. I can't wait to have you back on Radio Rehab to talk as a couple. In closing, Etta, what would you tell other women or people in the community or that have mothers or fathers, sisters, friends about, and they're concerned that their loved one is making bad, on a bad path with drugs and alcohol, where would you tell them to go and what worked for you?
Well, the first thing that I can say is this, is that don't give up on them. Don't ever give up on a person.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, my family and friends didn't give up on me. And there is hope. And you would have to approach that person in a very loving way and ask them from time to time, is it anything that we can do to help
mm-hmm.
you? And then, you know, find some resources for that person, like treatment centers and meetings and groups and that sort of thing, to be able to help them out.
Help them. So go and to them compassionately. Let them know you're there and let them know you did some research and you know where some treatment centers are and where some AA or NA meetings. Oh, okay.
Yes, exactly. That would be the best. That would be the best option because, you know, a person has to know that. I know for me that being in my addiction, I didn't think any of my family members loved me. I didn't think nobody loved me. And that's a pretty
lonely place to
be.
Yes,
a pretty lonely place to be. And that's what that person feels that's addicted.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like that nobody cares about them. Everybody looks down on them and they're such a bad person,
mm-hmm.
you know. But truly, the person, their families and members do love them.
Yeah.
But they just want them to live different and change their life, you know.
Sure.
And because they're destroying their lives. And your family members and your friends don't want to see you destroy your life. So,
no.
You know, it's just the way that you approach a person.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. And I know you have a home group, and you were telling me there's a party coming up Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I got to go to that party.
Yes, it's going to be really, really nice. And it's the KISS group. They're celebrating their 18th annual celebration. It's going to be located at 2nd and Blackford, on the corner of 2nd and Blackford. And it's at the New Art Gallery. It's the old red and white grocery store where that used to be.
Sure, downtown there by Haney's Corner.
Yes, yes, that's where it's located. And it's going to be today, starting at 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And so if you are in you have family and friends that want to come out and have some good clean cut fun. We're going to be doing a sobriety countdown. There's going to be a catered dinner, and we're going to be dancing. It's going to be really nice. So if you don't have anything else to do this evening, you got a few hours, come out and help us celebrate for a good cause.
And that's 6 to 10?
That's going to be 6 to 10, yes.
And it's the 18th year sobriety of the KISS group, Keep It Simple, Stupid group.
Yes, exactly.
Great. Anybody can come?
Anybody can come.
Well, yes. I'll be there.
Okay, well, I'm glad to see you there, Lisa.
I'm going to have to disco with Robert.
Okay, all
can
right.
I disco with your husband?
Yeah, that's fine. Yes.
That's great, Ed. Life is good.
It is.
And thank you so much for coming on and sharing and celebrating sobriety today.
Thank you, Lisa. It's a pleasure to be here.
I can't wait to have you and Robert back to give us all clues on what can make a marriage work.
Okay. All right. I'm looking forward to doing that.
Yes. And for you all that have been listening, thank you. If you have any questions or comments, you can call WEOA The Pump or write us. And you can hear Etta on www.lisasifecares.net on the World Wide Web. Just go on that and click podcast, and you'll hear her sharing, and her husband Robert's on there too. Next month, they will be back talking about recovery as a couple. Chuck and Tony will be on talking about sponsorships. So please, you guys, hang on. Listen again next Saturday and the following. We'll have a lot to share with you. And again, thanks for tuning in. And don't forget, between now and the next time, do the next right thing.